What do project managers do?
A project manager oversees a scope of work. And so what that means is maybe a company has a project where they want to do a data migration. They're managing everything in their on-prem systems and they want to move it, all their data, to the cloud. But there has to be one person at the top who oversees this work and makes sure that the project is actually successful. And that's the project manager. It's because people don't realize that project management is a leadership role. They think, oh, I'm just going to show up and send out some emails and maybe I'll schedule a meeting or two. Oh, no, 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 boo. You're going to be leading this initiative. And they recently dropped some data that showed that their forecast says there is supposed to be anywhere between a 25 million and 30 million person project management talent gap by 2035.
Welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD, and we got another special guest for you guys today. Her name is Miss Veronica White.
Hey, y'all.
And we came to talk about project management. But first and foremost, if you're listening on any streaming platform, please like, follow, leave us a review. And if you're on YouTube right now, only thing I ask is you hit the like button. But without further ado, Veronica, how you doing today?
I am doing good. How are you?
I'm good. I thought it was going to rain on us getting in. It's real muggy outside, but hey.
I know.
So far, so good.
Yeah, thank goodness. The storms the last few days have been very crazy. Not a huge fan.
Look, I seen the TikTok. It was like Frisco Dash when the tornado siren goes off, and it showed the man. He went and walked outside and looked. And then that was me 2 or 3 weeks ago when they had the tornadoes.
Yeah.
In Oklahoma. And then they were saying, hey, in Denton County and Collin County, mm-hmm. be careful. You know, you have the tornadoes coming. So there was like a tornado watch to a warning, but it literally went like right past us. And it went to like, it didn't touch down to Providence. I forgot where it touched down at, but then it ended up like going like towards McKinney and Frisco way. But I was just like, I got everybody out, and we went into like the bathroom or some stuff or whatever, because that was the first time it ever was like that close.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. It's so funny because I feel like the way that Texans are is that if they hear that there's going to be a tornado, the first thing they do is like go outside to see if they can see the tornado. And I feel like I grew up with old men just sitting in their garages drinking beer, just watching the storms and the lightning, mm-hmm. and completely unfazed. And I'm like, that's such a Texan thing to do.
Yeah.
Just and, be like, oh, okay.
And we grew up watching the movie Twister.
I know. And they glamorized chasing tornadoes. And it's like, I don't know. Should that be glamorized, right? Storm chasing?
Yeah. Crazy. Cause I think this guy, he's not a popular actor. However, they had just built a house. And the tornado lifted his son in the air. And I want to say he was in ICU, so I don't know if he's still there. I had to look up on there. But that's the other side of it. It's like, hey, you know, that can, you know, happen. So
yeah,
my tech/survival mind goes, I wonder, can you just buy parachutes? And like, in case of a tornado, just put parachutes on everybody. So like, if you go in the air real high, just rip.
Pull your cord. Pull your cord. I never even thought about that. Yeah. But honestly, I feel like depending on the winds, possibly you could survive that way.
Yeah. I mean, it's better than just going straight back splat down.
Oh my God, I know.
Or like some type of clothing, like, don't steal this, some type of tornado clothing.
Yeah.
To where if you go up in the air, like you just put your things out while you start gliding around like Batman or something.
And people do that, right? They like jump off cliffs and they, you know, they got the little.
Yeah. We need to get the MC Hammer pants.
I think that would work too. That would work.
I think that would work.
The laws of physics say it can be done.
But for the people who have not seen you on the other platforms, mm-hmm. who is Veronica?
I'm like, Veronica is me. Now I'm a project manager, a scrum master, professional development coach. And really, I just kind of help people pivot into project management that come from non-traditional backgrounds. So people who are, you know, maybe they were teachers or nurses or worked in retail and they're typically mid-career professionals and they want to transition into project management without starting over at the beginning. Like that's, you know, our demographic.
Okay. Look at that VSL right there in the intro.
Oh, is that okay? You know what I'm saying?
But before that, let's talk about a little bit of some of the stuff that kind of shaped Veronica. So before the glitz and glam with the TikTok fame and the Instagram fame.
Sure.
And the speaking engagements. What were you doing?
Struggling. Struggling full time. So basically, before I got into project management, I was really just focused on like survival, because I had my daughter when I was 17. So I was a teen mom, and I was also a single mother. So I had already graduated high school because I was determined to like kind of be the first person in my family to go to college. So I graduated high school at 16 and then got pregnant at 17. And I immediately started like working at call centers, and you know, I catered weddings before, like not like I was cooking, but I was out serving the food in the little tucks, you know what I'm saying? And just kind of grinding it out, trying to survive. But the goal was always for me to go back and get a 4-year college degree, because I just wanted that like so badly. I wanted to be the first person in my family to be able to accomplish that. So eventually I got the opportunity to go back to school full time. And I did, and I went and got my degree, and the plan was to go to medical school. And then I graduated in 2020 when I was 30. Mind you, that's how long it took me, like, to actually go and fulfill this kind of bachelor's degree goal. And I graduated in 2020. It was COVID, and I applied to medical school, and I didn't get in. And now I was just kind of like, oh, okay. You know, I was struggling this whole time. I was broke all the way through college. I thought that getting my degree was going to be my big break, and then it wasn't. And now I'm stuck with a chemistry degree, and I'm back struggling still. And I'm like, okay, I have nowhere to go, and I don't know what I'm doing. And it was, you know, it was not a great place to be in. So.
Okay. Yeah, I figured that much, because I was perusing through your LinkedIn, and I did see like some jobs where you were working like in like, I guess like some pharmaceutical offices and doing some stuff like that. So I was like, I wonder was she trying to pivot into healthcare at the time?
Yeah.
And so that's, I saw that a lot. No, I mean, it's cool. I think a lot of people think that, like, go to school, get a degree. I got it. You showing a job, you know, you're applying to the job saying, you know, hey, I got the degree. Now what? And they're like, okay. And
exactly. And then it's like, what is the thought process? Because I think especially when you come from a family where it's not that education wasn't prioritized, but my family was very blue collar. So like my mom was a stay at home mom. My dad was a military veteran, and then he was a cable man. And so for us, it was never, you absolutely have to go to school. You have to get a degree. It was very, you know, just show up, do your best and graduate high school, and then you'll figure it out type thing. But the people around me, like my friends' parents that had degrees, you could see that there was a difference between like how we lived and how they lived. And I wanted that. I wanted that success. And so that's one of the things that really drove me to want to get my degree. And I think we build up the school part so much and getting that good old
success part.
Yeah. You forget about the success part, and you think that once you graduate, like that's it. You've made it. And it's like, oh, honey, you're just at the bottom of the next level. Like, you still have to keep going. And I think people make the mistake of thinking, oh, as long as I can just graduate, like, I'll be okay. But it's a consistent effort that has to happen behind that, for sure.
Yeah. And really just thinking, like, for a major like yours, or those other majors, like biology, chemistry, you got the PT people that do their stuff.
Yeah.
Physical therapy, whatever it's called, that they have to. No, kinesiology. There we go. Mm-hmm. I always ask people when I meet them, or young people, are you majoring this? You know, what you plan to do with that? Because a lot of them don't understand, like, if you get that type of degree, like, you're going to most of the time have to go either go back to grad school or something else, because you're not going to get anything with that one alone, because of the prereqs that's required for the jobs that you probably actually want.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that was the other kind of scary realization, is because when I didn't get into medical school, now I had pigeonholed myself into the STEM field because my degree was in chemistry. So it's like, what are you doing with a chemistry degree? And I kind of felt trapped in that space. And people don't realize, like, you will limit your options sometimes if you go into school with one plan and not, oh, okay, I'm open to different opportunities. So that was also not that great. It obviously ended up working out, but at the time it felt like a failure for sure.
Right. And did you try to attempt to be a chemist?
I mean, I guess you could say yes. So, like, I was scanning COVID test kits for a little while. I did that. And I also did, like, some food science stuff, which was, you know, swiping the floor, making sure there's no bad bacteria growing where they're manufacturing food. Like, so I guess you could consider that chemist work, but it was certainly broke scientist work for sure. Yeah.
And then last question before we switch to like the next topic. You mentioned something interesting. You said you wanted the success that you saw, like, you know, your other friends' parents have.
Yeah.
And I think that's cool because I think I felt the same way, like growing up, like going to different people's houses. Like I had friends, his dad had a PhD, his mom was a lawyer. So you, of course, it's a difference in living. And then you see all these different things. And then you get older. And then what used to look like success to you then is doesn't mean the same thing now. So if you ask many different people about, hey, what is success to you? It looks different because you may ask your parents, they may feel they're successful. Hey, my daughter went to school. My daughter did this and that. I feel like I was a successful parent.
Yeah.
And you ask somebody else something, their version of success would be different. And then you find out that the success that you like or want to have, whatever, should like kind of be right in here and not kind of linked to things around you. Because if that's what it's linked to, you'll probably never feel like you're successful and probably never end up being happy. And that's why we see like all these people as millionaires, some like all these depressants and stuff like that, because they're chasing something they don't get any intrinsic value from.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that it's an interesting journey to go on, because I remember when I was in school, I used to always say, all I want to do is make $100,000 a year. After I've made $100,000 a year, like I'm good, you know, I'm not tripping on anything else. And then when I got into project management, I did make $100,000 a year. And then when I got into the next project management job, I made even more money. Mm-hmm. But the problem was I had a daughter who was getting older and I was working all the time and I never got to spend any time with her. And that's when you kind of start to realize like, oh no, I've placed all my energy and effort into accomplishing like these external things, but now I don't have the one thing that I was kind of doing it all for, which was this child that I have. And you have to kind of redefine what success really is to you. And it's like, it's really a spiritual journey because you have to look inward as opposed to searching for all the answers outside of you.
For sure. Now you've kind of already crossed that bridge. So did you decide to get into project management in 2020?
Yeah. So funny story. Here I am broke, sad, and quite desperate, if I'm being honest. And I have an aunt and she's a software engineer. And I remember being at her house and she said, look, you know, obviously med school didn't work out. So you got to figure out something else. And I think that you should consider becoming a project manager. And at that time, I didn't even know what project management was. You know, I had barely ever heard of it. And she made it sound so easy. She was like, oh, you're personable and you're organized. And I think they just need like a certificate or something. So, you know, she was trying to get me to stop bumming my life out and figure it out. And so I go and I Google like project management certificates, and the very typical stuff kind of comes up like, oh, get this random certificate on Udemy or Coursera, you know, all the things that don't really increase your marketability at all, but they help you learn the basics. And then there was the PMP. And when I looked it up, it said that PMP certified project managers on average make $120,000 a year. So I was like, oh, that's the one I want. I want that certification right there. And so I look into the class and it's a couple thousand dollars. And mind you, I don't have that money. And it's an advanced class and it's 2 weeks long. So you're taking it all day. And I borrowed that money from my sister and I quit my job. And I was like, I'm just going to go all in because it's an act of desperation. Like I don't really have a lot of options right now. And I took the class and I studied for a little bit and I took the PMP exam and I passed on the very first try above target in all three areas. And, you know, about 90 days later, I have my first project management role.
Nice. Honestly, after saying that, a lot of moms are project managers at home. They yes. just don't know it.
Yes, I know. And that's what I'm trying to tell people. I'm like, especially women and especially parents, you know, we are project managing our lives and the lives of our families. And you don't realize how transferable those skills are. But if you can manage kids, you can manage adults. You can manage adults doing tasks.
That reminds me of a comedian like Billy Sarris, his granddad would say, hey, adults ain't nothing but kids. They grew up. Think about it.
It's true, though. That's fact. Because
a lot of them operate the same way.
Yeah.
And that's why I also think people who are in people leadership with kids can actually excel better. Because if you got multiple kids, you know that each kid is different. So you got to handle each kid differently.
Yeah.
Some people don't have that skill set here. So they try to treat every employee the same. And that's why you do not get good results out of certain employees. Because you're... But what motivates that person doesn't motivate that person.
Yeah. And you have to care enough to be invested in how different people operate. Because I feel like a lot of leaders, they do try to come in with this mindset of, I'm going to tell you what to do and you're going to do it. But if you really want the best out of your team or your employees, like you have to be invested in what makes them tick and kind of lift them from the bottom instead of being at the top and trying to force them up. You know what I mean?
I definitely would agree with that. Now, I just thought about a question. I don't think I initially had it written down. From the time you got the PMP to you got your first job, mm-hmm. how long was that?
It was about 90 days. Yeah, it was about 3 months because I took my exam on the last day of January in 2021. I took the class at the end of 2020, got certified in the end of January, and then, yeah, got the job in April.
Okay.
Yeah, it was very quick.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was kind of a whirlwind because I think you're always telling yourself, oh, this is going to work. This is going to work. And that's what's powering you through all the uncertainty. And then when it works really quickly, you're like, oh, no, I hope I didn't overestimate my abilities here.
Yeah. I think it just reminds like people a lot of times they'll pray or ask God for something and he'll give it to them. And then they're like, I know you was listening.
yeah, exactly. And then I feel like what a lot of people struggle with is that when they're not mentally prepared to receive what they've been asking for, when you get it, you'll sabotage it because you're like, oh, no. Like I wasn't really ready. And I think if you ask God for something and you put the work in, oh, you better have your hands out ready to receive because when he gives it to you, like you got to take it and run with it.
Yeah. It's like the old story. What's that movie called? Facing the Giants or something like that. And it does the parable about the two farmers. Both pray for rain, only one prepared for it.
I'm not familiar with this.
Yeah, these like these string of like these, I guess like these Christian companies, they like to have these different type of movies like Facing the Giants, Fireproof. Facing the Giants is about like this coach that got this stuff going on in his life. It's in kind of a real life parable of like David versus Goliath, different things that he's kind of overcoming in his life with his wife and stuff. And then one is called like, I think like Fireproof about these husband and wife and they going through these things, how they can like stay together. I mean, they're cool, but it's definitely like stuff I always just take away and it stick with you because like, okay. Like I had a saying that I started saying 5 years ago, was like, if stuff was like not going the way I really wanted to. And I had said, am I going to be a complainer or a changer? So I tell clients that all the time, like we can complain about all this other stuff, but we can actually get to work.
Yeah.
Because ain't nothing going to change about us crying about it.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that that's another thing that a lot of people struggle with is that they will ask for something or they'll say that they want something, but then they're not willing to make the necessary changes or the necessary sacrifices or put the action behind it. It's like you can't just ask God, hey, just rain down blessings on me and I'm just going to sit here and wait. You know, you have to do your part as well.
And it got to be time for you. It's like a 5-year-old saying, hey, I want a sports car. You're not even old enough to drive yet.
Yeah.
It's not coming. You got to keep on waiting and hopefully that's what you meant to have.
Yeah.
But so, okay. You said it took you 90 days.
Yeah.
And we don't have to mention employers or whatever, but what industry were you able to get that job in?
So it was actually in biotech.
Okay.
Which brings me back to that chemistry degree because I really felt like I had ended up wasting my time when I didn't get into medical school, but it was really kind of divine alignment because it was a biotech startup in the city and it was a senior research and development project manager. And because I had that chemistry degree plus the PMP, like it was a very solid foundation to stand on. So that was really exciting. And I really kind of got to leverage what I learned in school on the R&D side, but then also my business experience from like working in call centers and understanding the business side and how that operates. And I kind of got to, you know, build a bridge between the R&D and business side.
Okay. So do you consider that to be like your first like corporate role?
I don't know. That's a good question. I've never looked at it like that, but I guess it was my first official corporate role. Yes. Because when I worked at the different organizations before, I mean, I feel like a call center, you know, can be corporate,
I guess it depends on the type. Like I did help desk for 2 years. So that was like my intro into corporate because of, I started learning a little games and politics and stuff that happens. So
yeah, 100%. Then yes. Yeah, definitely. It was different and it was interesting, but I also feel like it was the right place at the right time because it was a startup and startups are very scrappy. So you're not really expected to, you know, have this super structured PMO type background. It's more like things are changing on the daily and can you keep up with the chaos? And when you don't know any better, you're like, oh yeah, I thought chaos was, you know, the name of the game. So let's do it.
So when you got that first salary, like, did you negotiate or what?
I did.
Were you scared?
I was scared, but in my mind, I was like, even if they come back and they're like, girl, we're not going to give you what you're asking for. I was like, I'm going to take the job regardless because it's way more than, you know, what I was making before. But yeah, I did negotiate it and, they only ended up giving me like maybe $5K more than what they initially offered, but it was empowering because it reaffirmed like, oh, okay. You know, there's always space for that.
Yeah. Cause technically you went from like $0 to six figures.
Yeah, which can be a little overwhelming. It can be a little overwhelming because I definitely was not thinking like, oh, okay, what's the best way that I can be, you know, financially responsible with this money? That was not the first thought. The first thought was, oh, you know, I finally made it. Let me go buy a new car.
Yeah. No, I asked you that, though, because, I mean, there's different studies, and I've also had women clients where – sometimes they're a little more apprehensive on negotiating their worth. And so they sometimes need a coach or a friend or a mentor to either where they drop the email up for them or they just coach them through. It's like, you can do it. I was like, the worst thing they can tell you is no.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's a glorious feeling. And the reason why I push for people to negotiate, I just had a guy in my Discord. He got a role with Visa. It's a security role. And the first offer that came was like 108. And I asked him what the range was. And I was like, okay, cool. Well, like push for like 110 or whatever, right? So ask for like 115, but try to get 110.
Exactly.
And he pitched, and then the next day he was like, yo, they came back, they gave me 110 with a 10K sign on.
There we go.
So I'm just like, you just never know what you'll get unless you ask. I always ask that. Like if I'm interviewing or may join the company like mid-year, I'm like, all right, well, cool. Like, do y'all do annual bonuses? What's the cutoff on that? Okay, if I'm gonna miss that bonus, I'm gonna miss a guaranteed annual bonus of this. Can you guys give me this? Do you guys do compensation buyouts? Like, I asked all these questions and like, I was able to get a comp buyout like 2 years ago at the current company I'm at. And that just happened by happenstance. Cause I said, hey, well, if I leave here, I'm going to miss out on this and this. And so I need to, you know, y'all got to make it worth my while.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of people, and I feel like, especially women, I've met many women that didn't even know that you could negotiate your salary. They're like, oh, I thought they offer you something and then you just take it. I'm like, no, girl, that's why it's called an offer. Mm-hmm. Like you need to go back and forth. And to your point, you never know what you're going to get because I remember getting offered $86 an hour on a contract. And I was like, I really want 100. Like, I feel like, you know, I'm worth 100. And I remember my sister said, ask him for 120. She's like, you got all the leverage. Go ahead and ask them. She's like, you know, whatever they say. So I asked them for 120 and they came back at 106. And I was like,
exactly.
Yeah, like you end up getting more than what you asked for. So you have to ask, you have to shoot your shot because nobody else is going to advocate for you but you.
Exactly. Yeah. For sure. Now, funny enough, and this is one thing that I got a fun segment coming next. We never even said the simplest thing yet. Like, what do project managers do?
Oh my gosh. I know, right? And that's the funny thing is because in the beginning, I kind of wondered the same thing. Like, what does a project manager do before I jump into this? But basically, a project manager oversees a scope of work. And so what that means is maybe a company has a project where they want to, you know, do a data migration. They're managing everything in their on-prem systems and they want to move it, all their data to the cloud. There's going to be several different parts of the organization that are involved in this work, right? Like there's going to be the technical side. There's going to be the business side. You're going to have a bunch of subject matter experts, but there has to be one person at the top who oversees this work and makes sure that the project is actually successful. And that's the project manager. So, you know, designate a scope of work, a start and end date. It's not operational work that you manage. So you're not going to come in and do the same thing every day. But it's like, look, we are going to start here and we have to finish here in this amount of time with this amount of budget. And funny enough, like people don't know this, but 90% of project management is really your soft skills. Because you're engaging with so many different types of people and so many different personalities and so many different levels. Like you're going to have entry level all the way up to your C-suite level executives. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to manage all of this work without being a people manager. So you're an individual contributor, meaning that if somebody comes back from late lunch, comes back from lunch late, that's not your problem. If somebody doesn't show up to work 3 days in a row and they didn't call in, that's not your problem because they don't technically report to you. Like that's going to be between their actual people manager and HR. But as a project manager, you're an individual contributor. So you're trying to get buy-in from people to listen to you, even though technically they don't report to you. So it's a little bit of an interesting conundrum, if you will. But overall, project managers manage projects.
Nice explanation. So I made up this segment yesterday. I thought it was pretty cool. I pretty much asked like Copilot, like what are like some top five misconceptions about project management. So,
Okay.
Misconceptions about project management, agree or disagree. So I'm just going to read like the numbers and then you can add on to like everything. So this first one was like project management is just about following a process.
I'm going to say that I agree that that's a common misconception. Absolutely. And the reason why I say that is because there is no process on earth that will prepare you to take on a project because whatever can go wrong always does go wrong. Yeah.
Sound like the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah. Next, sir.
Had to get my Stephen A. on. So this one is implied. I said working overtime will fix delays.
Oh, my God. No. Absolutely not. And this is a funny thing about project management too, is because a lot of the time your executive leadership will think, oh, if we just throw more people at the problem, it'll fix the problem. But it takes a woman 9 months to make a baby and you can't have nine women make a baby in 1 month, you know? So
good analogy. A great project outcome means great business operations.
No, yeah, I agree. That's probably a common misconception just because it's more than the business that's impacted. And you also have to think about who is your key stakeholder here? You know, is it the business or is it a client outside of your organization? So making sure that they have what they need and that you actually delivered value, that's a good project outcome.
Okay. Project management is only for large projects.
Ugh, no. I've managed several little tiny projects and the devil can definitely be in the details in those too. So a project is a project is a project.
Cool. And then this last one, I don't even know what they meant by it. It was like change is always bad.
So that's a funny one. Change is not always bad. Change can be good. I think people get the perspective that change is bad when they don't anticipate that things are always changing. You're never going to have a project where there's not some level of change, whether it's small or large. And a true project manager goes into it saying to themselves, like, we reserve the right to get smarter. That's something my mentor used to always tell me. We reserve the right to get smarter. And it kind of creates a safe space for us to say, look, if we screw up on something, that's fine. We're just going to learn and keep moving forward. But if we go in really rigid and we don't allow change to occur when it needs to, then it kind of robs us of our ability to be agile. and adaptable. And that's what makes you think that change is bad.
Perfect. Perfect. Now, I'm going to have a whole bunch of questions under this segment. And so it's going to be also like for your company.
Oh, okay.
And how do I pronounce it? Is it a new consultant or a new consultant?
It's ANU.
ANU.
Yeah. ANU Consulting.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Because technically you are saying ANU.
Yeah.
But my mind went to, I don't see a Sanford in there and saying ANU. Okay.
Yeah. I know. I should have thought about that before, which is another thing that my mentor had told me. He's like, I don't know. I feel like the name is going to confuse people. And I was like, nah, it won't. Nobody ever says it correctly. I was right. Like, dang, he was right.
Speaking of that, so before we get into that, how were you able to find like a mentor?
So I actually found a mentor at my second project management role that I took on. And I dare say that he found me. So when I first started there, I was on a contract. They had a project that had a lot of government compliance implications that they had been trying to execute, and it was just flopping all over the place. It was bad. So they brought me in to kind of see it through. And when I was working there, I met him, and he was also new with the organization. They had just picked him up from a different company. And he was all about like, look, I want to overhaul the way that we do things here. I see he had a background in operations. So he saw a lot of opportunity, you know, to go in and clean things
That's
up.
That's me every time I go somewhere new.
Yes, exactly. You see that opportunity like, oh, we could streamline this process or do automation here and that type of thing. And when my contract was coming to a close, he asked me, you know, do you want to stay contracting and like find another contract somewhere, or would you be interested in going full time? And I was like, oh, I'd be open to working full time. And then he was like, I want you to work like for me directly and report to me directly. And he's the COO. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, you know, when opportunity presents itself, mm-hmm. you got to take it. And I learned so much from this man. He was a Jedi in my mind. I was like, I was his young Padawan learner, because mm-hmm. every single thing that he said was just so good. And he had been in the game for so long. And he also made me feel okay about doing my own thing. Cause I told him like, you know, I'm going to be teaching project management classes and teaching people to become project managers and blah, blah, blah. And it didn't even occur to me that a lot of companies, you're not supposed to be working a second job, you know, or you're not supposed to have your own business on the side. I didn't even think about it. And he was always so supportive. He would give me advice on how to do it and just how to be a good leader. And, it really changed my life. So shout out to George. I'll have to tell him, hey, I talked about you here.
Okay. Cool. Is he in the area or he's somewhere else?
Yeah, he's in the area. Yeah. He was actually from here, and then he moved, I think, to Colorado for quite some time. He lived in Hawaii for a little while too, working for a healthcare insurer out there, and then came back to take this job that he's still at.
Okay. So are you currently still in the corporate world, or are you doing like your own thing here and there for them?
Yeah. So, I just got off of a contract, which was cool. I'll pick up contracts every now and again to do consulting. But what I mainly do is help people pivot into project management. So I might take a contract for like 6 months or something along those lines. You know, and then I'll hop off and just keep running my own business, which honestly, I love because of the freedom.
Yeah. That's project management too, though.
Yeah,
you have to set it up. Whoever you got with, I saw your intro. Hey, you found us video that you had on there.
Yeah, yeah.
So I saw all that. So back to ANU Consulting. Yeah. When was that started?
Okay, so the funny thing about ANU Consulting is that I had been thinking about it ever since I got my first project management job, because I had to take a prep course to prepare for the PMP. And my instructor was just trash. He was so bad. It was so boring. I kept falling asleep during class. I had to do a lot of the learning on my own. And when I was mm-hmm. in college, I was an organic chemistry tutor. Hmm. Everybody hates O-Chem. Everybody's like, this is the worst class ever. But I was actually really good at teaching this complex subject and kind of breaking it out, down into something that was, you know, more digestible, if you will. And so I was like, oh, okay. I got PMP certified and got into the job and realized what a strong opportunity it was. And I started thinking, man, you know, I could do better than that guy. Like I could teach my own classes. And so in 2022, April of 2022, I gathered together like six of my friends and I was like, hey, do you guys want to take my PMP prep course? And they were so supportive. They were like, yeah, all right. And they showed up every day and listened to me talk over some slides. And I was like, and so you do this and then you do this. And that's where ANU Consulting was born, you know, so.
Shout out to the friends, though, for the support, though.
I know. They were so supportive and they're still so supportive to this day. They're always, you know, promoting me and telling other people about it. And, you know, one of them is like a very, he's doing very well as like a senior HR program manager at a Fortune 500. And I helped him make that pivot. And so I think God was using that opportunity to give me like a proof of concept, like, hey, if you build it, they will come. And yeah. So I kept building.
That's smart. Like a lot, you know, what's funny. A lot of people go rush out and then they sell the stuff before even seeing that the product works. Cause yeah. Before I started like my coaching business, it was the same. I had friends, they either had bad resumes or needed help to pivot in cyber or something IT related.
Yeah.
And so I pretty much did a lot of stuff for them in the beginning for free. And then we got the results that we needed. And so of course that added on to my legitimacy. And then I could also have use cases that, hey, these things work. And then I could start, you know, charging accordingly for what I was doing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like that. And I also looked at the school. I was like, it's booming. I was like, you got a lot of little members in there.
Yeah. Yeah. We built it over time. And I mean, it's so funny. I have two sisters and they're literally like my best friends, my spirit guides, like my biggest support system. And we were in Hawaii in this little shed that my parents have on their property. And, I was brainstorming with my sisters and I was like, man, I want to start a community. You know, where we can all support each other on our journeys to project management. And I'm brainstorming with them. And that was like a solid year ago. And so now we're at 1,400 members. And I screenshotted and I sent it to my sister who helped me actually build it out on school. She came in. I had never been a member of a community. She had been a member of several. So she was like, okay, you need a moderator. You need to have this. This is how you set up your calendar in your classroom. And obviously just supported me 100% of the way. And when we hit that 1,400 members, I sent it to her. And I was like, I remember when we were brainstorming in the mm-hmm. shed.
Is she in ops?
No. She's a Reiki practitioner. So she does Reiki and she'll also read like your chart, you know, your sign and tell you, you know, mm-hmm. based on where your stars are aligned, you know, I see
she
this.
She just
saw
her own thing, the fact that she was able to scale you to 1,400.
She did an amazing job. And I actually have another friend who owns an education company for tech sales. And I was telling him, he said, you know, I really want to build out my community and scale it. I said, man, you need to holler at my sister. I was like, cause she's amazing at it. And she's just good like that when it comes to what feeds people and what people need, you know, mm-hmm. to feel seen and to feel nurtured. And that was really the key to growing the community, is making sure that people felt that we were holding their hand through the process.
Nice. So you answered that one. What issues do newbies run into when they're trying to pivot?
Confidence.
You think that's the biggest one?
Oh, 100%. And I think the reason why is because people don't realize that project management is a leadership role. You know, they think like, oh, I'm just going to show up and send out some emails and maybe I'll schedule a meeting or two. Oh, nah, boo. You're going to be leading this initiative. And, you know, people will do as much as you let them get away with. So if you say, hey, this is a really important task, it's a top priority, there's a lot of dependencies around it, and I need it done by this date, and then you just walk away and you never go back and check in on it, I mean, there's an 80% chance it's not going to be done yeah. by that date because you didn't follow up. You know, and maybe it's not that the person is intentionally blowing you off. Maybe it's that there's a skill set gap there, you know, or maybe they're encountering some resistance with somebody that they have to be partnered with and the other person isn't doing their part. But that's your role as the PM, is to check in, remove obstacles, address issues, mm-hmm. you know, build bridges of communication. And if you're not doing that, you can't blame everybody else. So yeah. people, they don't feel emboldened in the beginning to step up and do that. And some people do, but the majority of people are a little intimidated by that aspect.
Glad you said that with the leading, pretty much a leadership role, it could be a, either a role that probably has some direct reports, or it could be an IC, but still a leadership role. Mm-hmm. Now, do you also encounter people that you realize, like, you ain't got the personality type for this?
Oh my God,
you gotta, you need to do something where you by yourself and don't talk to anybody.
Yes, 100%. I think the thing that I encounter sometimes that I find most disappointing is people who lack self-awareness, and they come in and they tell me about all their problems and why they're unhappy with where they're at. But at the end of the conversation, I can tell that the problem is actually them. I'm like, it's not everybody else. They'll say, my boss didn't like me. They were holding me back. Then I went to this other company.
Same thing happened again.
Yeah. Same thing happened again. They didn't like me there. People are just super intimidated by me. And, you know, I'll listen and I'll kind of ask some probing questions and I'll realize like, oh no, the problem is you.
It's you.
Yeah. And the thing about being a project manager is that you have to be willing to take accountability, because if the project succeeds, it's because your team was successful. But if the project fails, it's because you failed to make your team successful. So you don't get a lot of the clout for the win, but you take the fall if you lose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. That's, I think that's similar to the people who keep taking bad job at the bad job.
Yeah.
They don't understand why they're doing it or the reason behind doing it.
Yeah. It's like the problem is you, man. You got to look in the mirror and you have to, you know, make a choice to change your ways, change your environment, upskill yourself, whatever it may be. But to do that, you have to acknowledge your areas of weakness. And a lot of people don't want to do that. They only want to be like, well, I'm really good at this, this, and this. And it's like, well, what are you not really good at? And you're like, I don't know. That's a problem. You need to know the areas in which you're weak so that you can nurture and grow those areas. You know, that's the only way.
Right. And we talked about this earlier, but now we could probably flesh the question out a little bit more. What careers already have PM experience, but they don't know it?
Ooh. That's a good question. There's so many of them. I'll say a really common one is teachers. A really common one is teachers. Another really common one is people who have like management roles in retail environments, mm-hmm. people who manage sales teams. Let's see. We've helped a couple of realtors transition. They use real big transactions that had vendors and, you know, marketers and all these other things to help qualify them. EAs. A lot of executive assistants have project management experience. So yeah, there's so many different aspects of what a project could be. Mm-hmm. And people just don't realize that a lot of it is in our daily lives.
Yeah. I think most people do. Like, for example, right, as you're talking, right, I'm thinking about things that have to be done, whether it's a big or small. And mm-hmm. so like you mentioned about come from a blue collar background. That's where I come from. So my dad's side business is he's been doing, if I'm 33, he's been doing it every bit longer than I've been alive. So we're going to say give or take 35 to 40 years, concrete stuff.
Oh, nice.
And so like the side business is like they'll either, you know, do patios or driveways. So you got to come in, expect it. Then, you know, from memory, they already know we like using this builder. We need this. We need this guy to set this up. We need this. Okay, if we get all this done, we can expect it to be done in, you know, 2-3 weeks or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, like, technically, you know, you're doing many projects at people's house.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like the person that you're doing that work for, who's funding it, is basically your sponsor, but they're also in a lot of ways your client and your key stakeholder. And, you know, unless you're sourcing the concrete yourself, you have to get that from a vendor, right? And mm-hmm. then you have these other people, maybe laborers or contractors yep. that you're having to leverage. Those are your team. And so a lot of the times what we find is that people do have experience managing projects, but because project management has its own language, they have a hard time, you know, yeah. seeing the correlation. But once they learn the language, they're like, oh, I have been doing that.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. And I think so. And this is not a question I wrote down. So the next part is, how does that, okay, so like, for example, in my lane, a lot of people struggle with that and they are doing things on their own and they're trying to dress it up as experience or projects, whatever. How do you guys help the newbies show that experience on their resume and actually get interviews and jobs?
Yeah. So the first thing that we do after they get PMP certified, because we will not try to place anybody who is not PMP certified. So like you have to go through, take the course, get the hours, pass the exam. Like, I don't want to be that person, but I'm like, you know, you could show me better than you could tell me that you're serious about this. And so if you go through that process and you take this 4-hour exam and you pass, I know you're for real. But after that, you know, we look at the resume and we also leverage what they use to qualify them for the PMP exam. And we say, we want to shift the perspective of your work. So we want to speak about your work through a project management perspective. Meaning a lot of the times people will just pop off, you know, random bullet points like I did this, I did that on their resume. And it's like, no, tell me about how you led. Tell me about how you strategized. Tell me about the KPIs you were tracking. You know, speak through that perspective. And then we'll put them through a series of mock interviews as well. And we also have like a project management, you know, interview course that people can pick up from us off our website. But that helps people understand the project management mindset and how to answer behavioral questions when it comes to project management. Because a lot of the times what you'll see on the PMP as well is they'll ask you a behavioral question. They'll give you a long paragraph like, you're a project manager at a construction project and everything's going good until, you know, your client gets really upset at you and everything on your team is falling apart. And they're like, what does the project manager do first? You're like, cry? I don't know. What does the PM do first? And we kind of teach them how to answer those.
Okay. Let me ask you this, because this reminds me of a conversation we were having this weekend where the guy said he got asked a curveball question in the interview process. Mm-hmm. And they were saying, hey, what would you do if you got your bosses were yelling at you about some incident that was costing like $5,000? I think that was like a minute or something. And I knew why they didn't like his answer, because it was funny to me when he said, all right, I'll tell him, hey, relax, we're on the same team here. I was like, you know, nobody want nobody to tell them relax.
I love that answer. He said, relax, we're on the same team here. I do love that. What do they call that? We want to de-escalate the situation. But no, that's true. And, you know, a lot of the times what I think helps people in project management interviews is they will ask you a question, but it's very generalized. Mm-hmm. And instead of you trying to say, well, I think that I would do blah, 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 I will respond to that question with a question and say, well, I think for me to understand how to appropriately address it, I need a little bit more information about this situation. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like they'll ask, oh, you have a problem vendor, blah, blah, blah. What makes them a problem vendor? Have we experienced this issue in the past? What kind of constraints are they experiencing? How often am I checking in with this vendor? You know, you want to go in and do that probing. Mm-hmm. And your hiring managers appreciate that, because the question is really about your thought process.
And going back to the things I always talk about when it comes to doing resumes, stuff like that. I hate when people put detail oriented and all that kind of stuff. Because I was like, you can show them in the interview better. Yeah. So what you just did is actually detail oriented. Yeah. Going through the details and paying attention. And versus me just saying it, and yet I don't do it in the interview.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, while I was looking at my phone, I was trying to find you talking about the PMP. I don't know if you're on X or not. Are you on X?
I'm not. And everybody says, you know, you need to get on X. That's where all the VCs are. I'm like, oh, are they dropping gems? I don't know, because I'm not on it.
So like a while back, this was, 3 years ago, I want to say. There was this, she's pretty much like a known, like she's a scammer for real. She was telling people about, I know people who can create you a fake PMP, you know, PNG and stuff like that. So like I had this picture. Cause I went, I tried to type it right here.
Oh my God. Y'all with the fake PMP. Please send that to me. Please. That's the doctor. He looks like a child right there too.
It was that, but I think I have it like somewhere in my things. Cause like that, when I tell you, cause I did a whole podcast episode on it, when it dropped, because like it just had the TL in a frenzy, because we were like, why are you telling these people to commit like fraud?
Yeah. And I'm so glad that you're bringing this up, because I actually have a story that supports this. I had a girl come to me and she was like, I don't know why I'm not getting hired. Can you look at my resume? Like, you know, check out my background and see what's going on. And she said that she had her PMP and her CSM. And so there was something about her that just made me think that maybe she was lying, you know? And so I thought to myself, well, let me just see if she really does have her PMP. This is how easy it is to verify this information. I Googled PMI's phone number, gave them a call. They picked up on the very first ring. They're like, hey, this is PMI. How can I help you? I was like, hey, I just want to verify if this person has their PMP or not. And they're like, what's their first and last name? I gave it to them. They were like, there you go. They didn't ask who I was. They didn't verify who I am. They didn't ask me any questions. They're like, do you have the credential number? What's their first and last name? Anybody can call and very easily verify whether or not you are lying. And the worst thing in my mind that can happen is that you fought so hard for the opportunity and now you've got a six-figure offer and the job of your dreams, but you got in on a lie.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's going to get snatched right from under you.
Yeah.
You know, like, is that what you want for yourself? It doesn't make sense, because the same energy you put into your lie, you could put into actually being who you say you are.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the thing that we would tell people all, like, on the timeline. Like, I've been in the game 10 plus years now. So, yeah. Like, a lot of times people try to say I was, like, gatekeeping, or my friends at the time were gatekeeping. I was like, no, we're trying to give you sound advice.
Yeah.
Like, I've had HR professionals on the show. We've actually talked about, like, hey, what happens if they find out you lied on your resume? It's like, they got grounds to terminate you at will.
Yep.
And so a lot of people aren't thinking about that. Like, there is a lot of fake it till you make it. Some people do it better than others.
Yeah.
I just don't propose it, because I already know how it is. And if they find out, you know, they've already been – since 2020, people interviewing for other people, and then other people get on the job and it's not the same person. They can't do the job. And now in the small circle of recruiters and everywhere else, they're starting telling people about you, don't hire this person.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, it's just something that's not worth it. I get the fake it till you make it attitude. I 100% get that. What I don't understand is people who want to do the fake it till you make it, then they get the job, but then you don't want to put the work in when you get there.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't made it just because they gave you the offer, boo. You haven't made it yet. You got to keep showing up and making it every day. So, and the other way that you can look at that is, some people might say, well, I don't know what to do. Like, I scam my way into this job, blah, blah, blah. Well, are you not resourceful enough to go on YouTube and say, they just asked me for this? What is this? How do I create this? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was one of the big issues of the pandemic too. Like, a lot of companies a surplus of money just hiring people.
Mm-hmm.
You had companies hiring, pretty much trying to go against their competitors to just hire people to hire them so they can hire them.
Yep.
So a lot of people were hired and did not do anything, and they didn't even try to upskill themselves, and then cried 2 years later when they got laid off. It was like, you didn't do any work.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't make any sense. It goes back to the thing with the degree, is like, we are brainwashed into thinking, oh, all you need to do is get your degree and then people are just going to start throwing money at you. That's not how it works. And it's the same thing in your job,
mm-hmm.
you know, and this isn't school. You will get fired and then you're going to have a hard time finding another role. You have to show up every single day. You have to be willing to continue to pour into yourself and upskill yourself and grow in your role. Because if not, especially if you work in tech, oh, boo, you're getting left behind.
Yeah.
Like,
speaking of that, also for the newbies, like, what tools or softwares should they either be looking into or should they know how to use in order to be a PM?
So it's going to depend on the type of project management that you do. So, for instance, a lot of construction companies, you know, obviously they're using like a waterfall methodology. So you can use something like MS Project, Microsoft Project, right? It's kind of a dinosaur in the space, you know, no shade to Microsoft, but it could use some new features. But you're not going to use something like Jira because you're not running an agile methodology. But if you're in a tech space where you are leaning into agile, then you would need to know Jira. And then for other spaces that run hybrid methodology, so for those of you who don't know, kind of that buffet between agile and waterfall, you can learn something like Asana or Monday.com or Smartsheets as a personal favorite. So you really need to understand the industry that you're going to be working in and then what type of methodologies are most commonly used in that industry. Then you can identify the software you need to know. But foundationally, regardless of the industry, please know Excel. Please know Excel. You need to know Excel because Excel is still that thing. Maybe Tableau, you know, mix in a little something, something, but Tableau, please know Excel.
Power BI.
Power BI is good. And, you know, maybe you don't know how to build dashboards in Power BI. Do you know how to read them? That could be beneficial, you know. So just things like that. You need to have an awareness of how projects are typically executed in your respective lane.
Sure. And for the people that I don't know who haven't seen some other episodes I've did with people that are in either product or project management, could you explain to them about, you know, the difference? Well, what is, you know, agile? What is waterfall? The differences between the two? And which one you probably like better?
Well, when you're a healthcare technology girly, you don't get a lot of options. It's pretty much agile everywhere you go. But agile is something that I see a lot of companies trying to adopt right now, even when it's not necessary, but it was originally built for software development and for the technology space. And it just basically means that you are running a methodology that's very adaptive. Technology changes very quickly, so you need to be able to quickly shift in the methodology. And so basically, like, you can easily move tasks around, you know, you're just more flexible, like what the name infers. Waterfall is a little bit different because this is where you're setting up your task in a linear manner. It's like, oh, okay, we do step one, then step two, then step three, then step four. It's like making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You know, we know that we can follow these linear steps in this kind of sequence, and we're going to be able to get a PB&J at the end. It's not like that in software development because you're continuously iterating over and over again and trying different things to see what works and then testing to see if your client's happy with it and then taking their feedback. That's more of that agile methodology. And then with hybrid, which is probably my personal favorite, you get to pick what you like out of both. So you say, this works from waterfall, this works from agile. I'll just take these agile ceremonies and these waterfall components and I'll put together my own project plan.
Nice. I know my first bit of really my role at JP Morgan was a lot of different things. I did like some GRC work. I did some product work. I did some project management work. It was my first time working in agile. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't explained about agile till I was like pretty much almost gone. The whole time I didn't know, like, hey, these things are 2 week sprints.
Yeah.
And if you don't finish in this sprint, you need to put it in the next sprint. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that. I just was leaving them open. And this thing's like, no, I was like, well, I used Jira in the past, but literally because I had a task assigned to me and I would be done and I would let like the PM or whoever assigned it to me know, hey, I
close it out.
I did. Yeah. So it was like, it was never like that for me. I didn't have to have my own project and deliverables that I had to do.
Yeah.
So that was like pretty, it was pretty funny to me because I was like, you know what? A lot of that's on my fault because I just never asked like, hey, what am I supposed to be doing with Jira here? I was just going off of assumption.
I mean, and that's, it's funny that you would say that because when you're getting your PMP, that's something that PMI talks about is before you run an agile initiative, you need to know what experience your team and your resources has using agile. Because if you have an entire team of people who have no experience or exposure to agile, there's going to be a learning curve in the beginning because it's not an intuitive methodology. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it's something you have to learn. And there's hundreds of agile ceremonies. So one day you think you know it all. And the next day you got some agile coach rolling up and they're like, we're going to do blah, 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 blah. And you're like, what is that? I have no experience with that. So that's something that PMI, you know, harps on. It's like, if you're going to be in an agile environment, you got to make sure that the team you have has a decent amount of exposure or you're willing to teach them how to run agile.
Nice. So I had another question down here. Do you have a, like an estimate of like maybe how many people you possibly help?
Oh man. I want to say probably somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000.
Wow.
And the reason why I say that is because that includes people in our community. That includes people that have just taken our, you know, purchased our boot camps, our live classes, or our self-paced courses. And then just people like who shout me out on LinkedIn and they're like, thank you so much. Like, it was your YouTube videos that, you know, helped me do blah, 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 or helped me realize I met the qualifications, or your ebooks taught me how to write my application and, you know, sit for the PMP. So I would say probably somewhere between that amount.
Nice. I know, like, that's Thanks. Something I've been having a. I've been going back to people like 5 years ago. I'll be in my LinkedIn and say, hey, I ain't talked to this guy in a long time. Hey, you remember that time when I was working with you? What was that salary you had back then and that job we got? And then like they'll tell me, because I go back now, just been adding it because I know for a fact I did over like 2 million in salary increases. So I have to go, keep on going back and finding people.
Massive. That I've
helped. Yeah. So I was like, I was never documenting it. It wasn't until like when we started to like reorg everything and revamp it.
Yeah.
And like the easy selling point. Like, it's like, hey, look, it's right here. And these people have first and last names. You can go ask them on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
So that was like, that's why I was like wondering, like, I wonder if she's going to have the same issue I have. So on top of that, like YouTube, like people mention me all the time. Hey, I was never a client, but I watched all the podcasts and such. And, you know, I finally got my job doing this. And, you know, a lot of your tips help. So.
Yeah. And it's really gratifying. I mean, I'll wake up and I'll just get a notification from LinkedIn that's like, oh, so-and-so tagged you in their posts. And it's somebody you've never met and never heard of. And they're like, oh, I just got PMP certified. You know, thank you to Veronica White with ANU Consulting because I watched all her videos or I bought her ebooks. And you're just like, it's those little signs from God, like it's working. You know, you're walking in your purpose. Mm-hmm. Like even people that you don't have the pleasure of engaging with one-on-one are still deriving value from what you've created. And like, it's those moments that reaffirm like, oh, okay, I'm on the right path. Like I'm doing the right thing.
For sure. And what about this one? What's the difference between a technical PM and a regular PM?
All right, y'all. So there's a running joke on my Instagram. I do some educational videos on my Instagram, but there's definitely more of my goofy side. And it's
should always... I play it? Because I was looking at that last night. I was trying to say, because I have a section for your social media, and it sure is going to be like, I was going to like your top view videos and trying to see ask questions about that.
So, you know, I love it. I love to be kind of goofy. I was a theater kid back in the day, if y'all can't tell. But the difference between a technical PM and a non-technical PM is that a technical PM actually has a technical background. And those PMs are sometimes much more respected in my industry. So like, especially in healthcare tech, because they're like, oh, okay, well, I was a front end developer back in the day. You know, or I was a full stack developer, or I did this, or I did that. And so they have that technical foundation and skill set when they're running initiatives. A non-technical PM means you come from a business background, like me. And a lot of the times we'll laugh at ourselves and be like, I'm just a really good talker. Or I'm really good at making friends, you know, and I'm really good at presenting. But it still works either way. You know, it can be a little hard because on the technical side, you don't have a technical background. You can't necessarily tell when people are sandbagging mm-hmm. or you're having to lean on your subject matter experts a lot. And sometimes, you know.
What's sandbagging?
Well, like when they're like, oh, you want me to execute that? That's going to take 3 weeks.
Oh, I see the pros and the cons.
You know what I'm saying? It's like somebody with a technical background would be like, bro, it's going to take you 3 hours. Like, stop mm-hmm. playing. You know, you just don't want to do it type thing. So it's a balancing act. But the funny thing between technical and non-technical is that we each kind of have our ways in which we shine. Mm-hmm. It's very rare in my experience that you find a technical project manager that is really good facilitating. Mm-hmm. You know, because our technical resources are much more like, leave me in my own lane. Let me do my thing. I only want to talk to people if I absolutely have to. And non-technical PMs are like, well, facilitating is what we do. Like, put me on the stand in front of a group of C-suite executives. Like, I'm here. I'm ready to perform. And your non-technical PMs are like, please don't do that. So we each have our mm-hmm. our own little skill set, but it's an unspoken rivalry.
Yeah. So now I move to, you know, your social media. And like one of my things I had said, like, you know, are you a typical jokester?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. The reason I'm like this, I blame my dad, is because he was also a theater kid growing up. Very goofy. Loved to make people laugh, you know, just that was his whole thing. And so I kind of adapted that as well. And when it came to social media, when I first started, I was getting a lot of hate, because what I didn't know was that a lot of people hate project managers. They're like, oh, PMs are useless. All you guys do is schedule meetings and yell at us and blah, blah, blah. And at first I was like, oh no, I don't want to create content anymore because like I'm getting so much hate online. And then I was like, actually, no, I'm going to start making videos about how everybody hates project managers. And I'm just going to lean into it and be like, I don't care whether you hate us or not. Like, I'm just going to do my thing. And people loved it. And that's when my social media kind of started to blow up.
Nice, nice. The funny thing is, as much as I love to record, I really don't like making short form a lot.
Yeah.
I would have to just keep the camera on and record. Like, I could do this all day.
Yeah.
But when it comes to like, oh, okay, let's do this little reel, it's that, like, I would have to be like, get a reason for it. Like, I don't know. Or the things I want to do with my undiagnosed ADHD brain is, I'll do it and I'll forget to do what I want to do, because I like to do like funny stuff too, but it's like in a different way. Like, I'll just take something like, I don't know. Do you remember like 2 years ago when Ginuwine went viral for the little dance? Same OG.
Yes, actually. And people were like, bro, sit down. Like, you're.
So, like, I think I had posted something like that. I saw it somewhere on my TikTok, but it was like when, whatever year it was, but my LinkedIn inbox was booming, and I was like, when the recruiter hits you with the right numbers, and it was Stefan Diggs. He did the same OG celebration touchdown, but I was able to find the audio. So like, I like to put stuff like that and do it, but I'm so busy, I'm never just be able to get my random clips and put funny stuff on there, just because. And honestly, I think I'm disinterested a little bit in short form, because they be wanting you to either record the stuff in their platform and post it a lot of times too, because like TikTok is bad at that. I was like, it's no way possible. Like, it's only some of my content is hit or miss when like it actually does good on TikTok. I was like, this stuff does great on YouTube, so I'm just gonna stick with the platform that actually enjoys it, versus, you know, me having to, you know, grift a little bit to get the stuff up.
Yeah. Well, that's the funny thing about the different platforms too, is because it took me a little while to learn that what hits on TikTok is not hit on Instagram, does not hit on YouTube. And I've only had one video that went viral on all my platforms with the exception of YouTube. And it was that, hi, I'm a project manager video. And that one is really like, I gained probably 15,000 followers off that video.
Wow.
It was insane.
See, I had one that went viral on Instagram, and it didn't work the same way for me.
Really?
It was a joke. It was from wrestling, and I don't know what the storyline was. I don't know if Vince McMahon was trying to see if who like was pregnant, like who had somebody pregnant or something on wrestling, and he was saying all the black people, something. I had to find it, but I was like, this is what companies are telling the employees or something like that. And like, it went crazy on Instagram, because it's like, it was just something funny. And I like looked up with that one. It went up like everywhere I posted it at. But
yeah,
either that or just funny stuff. Like, my favorite wrestler, Stone Cold. So like when he went to
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
And so I had a thing that was like, when the recruiter tells you that the position is on site. And so just Stone Cold said, what? What did you just say?
So, but that's the thing that I've realized too, which I find frustrating, is that if you drop like a funny video that's like a meme video on Instagram, it will go viral, but you will not get followers off of that video. So I have like 5 meme videos on my page that have done well over 1 million in views, but you don't get followers from that. You get followers from like you. Mm-hmm. From like people seeing your face and like that kind of content. So that was something that I had to learn through time, because sometimes I'll post things, I'll go like 10 videos in a row, you know, 5, 10, 15K. And then I'll post a meme video, 1 million views like that. And I'm like, crazy. Man, all y'all want to do is laugh, bro.
Facts. I've been meaning to just pick up the phones, like, y'all don't really care about solutions. Y'all just...
Y'all want to goof off.
Y'all
want to
hear about 50-50 dates, men versus women, protecting women, jail, Diddy, all this type of stuff. This is what y'all want to hear about. Y'all don't want to hear about anything that's going to actually put some money in your pocket.
Yeah. And that's why I love YouTube, because what I've learned about YouTube is that people on YouTube, they're there to learn. And I'm like, oh, okay, thank goodness. Because I have some knowledge I'd like to drop, but on Instagram, you won't get love on a educational video like that.
Yeah. Not only that, you build a better connection with your audience.
Yeah.
And that's why I push people to do long form. Cause like, you don't build that connection on TikTok anywhere else. Like the kind of like what the Twitch streamers do.
Yeah.
You have that on YouTube where people have literally been watching me for 5 years, where they'll say, man, I've been watching you for that. I've been saving up for this consultation, or, no, you gave me so much free game. I just felt like I needed to purchase something. I was able to do this and this and this. So like that is the level of trust that I build my audience, which also goes into, they like the kind of guests I bring on. I was talking to, my guy AD. He does, RPA, robotic process automation.
Yes. And, we've met.
Yeah. And he was just telling me, at the event Saturday, he was like, yo, they said, hey, HD has some quality leads from his team, man. Like, stay sticking with him. He has some quality leads from his audience. And I was like, yeah, cause they know, like, I don't really, if I wanted to, I could just bring anybody and everybody on here who's has something to sell, has a course, give them the link and make my money. But
yeah,
at the end of the day, if my end goal is to help my audience and give them stuff I feel like could be productive, then that's what I'm gonna do. I'm not going to just go with everything that's just shiny just because, and I'm also not going to approve everything that people are doing. And I'm going to talk about it on my platform, which can cause me probably not to do some episodes with those people. I'm perfectly fine with that.
Yeah.
You know, or just come on and convince me otherwise, which would probably be hard to do.
Yeah.
But that's kind of what I've kind of my shtick has been, and I've leaned into that. And, you know, it's a slow but sure process of like, of keeping your content organic and pure. But, you know, I'd rather take that than just taking the road to the top of kind of selling my audience out, because eventually they get tired of that and they move on and that engagement goes down.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And I respect it, because I think, you know, when it comes to being on any type of social platform, people will try to sell it as something that you can grow really quickly and make a lot of money off of. But the fact of the matter is your name and your reputation in this space is everything. Mm-hmm. So if you're selling people a box of crap so you can get your commission on it, eventually they'll stop watching. They'll tell other people not to watch you. And then like your reputation is completely sullied. So I think, you know, having that true care for your audience is the only thing that really guarantees your longevity.
Yeah. And I based off a background. Like, I know, I mean, yeah, I make much more money than like the most average person, but it's still hard to make money.
Of course.
So I respect the time it takes you to, like, whether you spend $1 or $10,000 with me, I respect it. So that's kind of where I go into, like, it's just not easy. Nobody's just giving out free money.
Yeah. 100%.
And I was going to ask you also, like, how do you like filming content? Do we have the PMP podcast coming anytime soon?
I get asked that a lot. People are like, bring on a project management guest and, you know, do your own show type thing. The only thing about podcasting is that if it's expensive, it's an investment, like having a studio and the setup and the AV and stuff. But I really do love filming content, and I don't want to brag, but when I was in the eighth grade, I was voted by my teachers most likely to host a talk show.
See, I can hear it in the voice. I can tell you watch. What was your favorite talk shows you used to watch? Because we're not like too far off from my age. I know she's going to say y'all. Jerry, Mari. What was it? What was her name? Jenny?
I don't think that I watched Jenny. I used to, way back in the day when I was little, I used to watch Sally, Jesse, Raphael. But growing up, oh man, if I was sick and staying home from school, put on Maury. I want to know who the father is, or I want to see the teens that, mm-hmm. you know, I don't listen to my mama and I'm 10 years old.
Montel, Oprah.
Yes.
It was just like, hey, if you had a personality or something, you can get on TV and you can have a show. Cause like, I was a little bit too young to really watch Arsenio Hall.
Yeah, me too.
That was like a little bit before my time, but I wish I would have got a chance to watch. I think everybody always talks about his show.
Yeah.
But I mean, between those, you had all the Judge Joe Brown, Judge Mathis, Judge Judy, you name it. I used to get in trouble a lot sometimes at school. So I definitely was like at home watching the stuff that I didn't really want to watch.
Yeah.
But it was on. So.
No, I love it. And it's funny too, because, Whenever I go, you know, I told you my grandma, she's 80 years old. And whenever I go and visit her, that's the type of stuff she still likes to watch. So I was literally over there hanging out with her yesterday, and we're sitting down. She said, well, let's go and see what they got going on paternity court today. Grandma, but I'll watch it with her because that's my queen.
I knew I was getting older when I started seeing people I went to school with on them shows.
Shut up. Are you serious?
Yes. And I found out the background about the shows, and they don't really pay that much, just the exposure. I was like, y'all got it. Yeah. I'm not going to make a fool of myself for that amount of money.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
But eventually people forget. But two things I forgot I wanted to ask you. Well, really one big one. Being that, like, pretty much you run your own business and stuff like that, I'm pretty sure that you do lean on AI to help you with some stuff. How do you feel about it in project management? Like I really do believe that AI has possibly crippled Scrum Master roles. And I only say that because, like, for me, I use Loom. And so all my calls or anything like that, when it's a call, Loom agent comes in, transcribes everything, action items, things to do, break down the whole call right there. You know, yeah. Somebody got to say any impediments or whatever you want to say, it's right there. And you can instantaneously.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, the Scrum Master was kind of doing that by hand at one point.
Yeah.
Where, matter of fact, and this is how I started learning. I didn't even know, like, how important it was. But, like, when I moved out here for my first job, 2016, when I was working at NOC for, like, income, a PCI DSS industry, we used to, like, do Scrum meetings, like, every day. But I really never paid attention because it didn't really matter to me. But then at JPMC, we would have our Scrum call, like every couple of days. And so technically we didn't have a Scrum Master. One of the leaders on the team, he was also functioning as Scrum Master, where he's asking us about, you know, stuff I had in Jira, any impediments we need to work on this, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I learned that word from. And I mess with people who are PMs or Scrum Masters saying impediments because it's funny to me.
We love that. Are there any impediments or blockers that we're experiencing right now? Oh, man, love to drop that. But I mean, honestly, I get this question a lot about AI. I'm really excited about it because AI isn't quite where it needs to be to, like, replace a PM because of the soft skills and the emotional intelligence that are required. But there are so many AI tools that make a project manager's job so much easier. Like the Loom tool that you just talked about, that's a really good one. Motion is a really good one. A lot of the project management software that we use, like Smartsheets and stuff like that, they are developing AI features that you can leverage. Even something as simple as Copilot.
Yeah.
You know,
it's all inside, you know, Outlook now. You got Gemini inside of Gmail now. That's helping you. Hey, you want to polish this?
Yeah.
You know, per my last email.
Yeah, exactly. Go ahead and polish it. Like, that makes our lives easier. And it's all those little kind of mundane tasks that we don't really feel like doing. AI is taking that over, and I appreciate it, and I love it, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, because definitely, look, if you don't know how to do VLOOKUP, get AI to help you with a VLOOKUP.
Man, and it used to be like, you know, people used to flex and be like, oh, y'all know how to do a VLOOKUP? Like, I know how to. And now look at us. We're all even.
Yeah, exactly. Between that, like, we should use Excel, and we would get the databases to connect into Excel. So from, like, SQL databases. And I don't know, just little fun stuff I learned that I don't really highlight a lot of times on my resume because, like, those aren't the roles I'm targeting. But I definitely
Boy, because when they see you got the skill set.
They say, oh, yeah, I saw you did something with Power BI. I was about to. When I was at Goldman Sachs, they were about to make me be the dashboard person for, not Power BI, for Tableau.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, I don't want to do that.
Not preferred.
I mean, but there's a lane for that because they look for people that just know how to do Tableau. You can niche down, make your money, and that's all you got to do,
Tableau. Yeah, heck yeah. Subject matter expert in Tableau. People love that.
Mm-hmm. Yep, just be Googling SQL queries. And once you get your couple of queries down that you need, you're good to go.
Yeah, that's true. And what I love about Tableau is, like, the data visualization is really nice. You can kind of make it look however you want and make it pretty. And, you know, as a PM, I'm a big fan of aesthetics, like the way you present your data. If it's good looking, you know, the right colors and the right shapes and, you know, that kind of representation, it makes a difference in how it sells to your audience. And that's another thing that my mentor taught me. He used to always say, when you're presenting data over time, you know, you don't want to have those sharp edges in your chart. He's like, just make them rounded. it makes people a little bit less nervous. And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah. And like your lines, they should never be red unless it's bad. You know, if it's good, they should be green or like a light blue or a light purple is very relaxing to your audience. And I'm like, man, this guy is a G, you know? And so like, those are the types of things that I'll teach my students now so that they know when you go in, like the way that you present data matters and it changes the way that people feel about the way that they're receiving it.
Yeah. Nice, nice. Well, was there anything that I didn't ask you that you were hoping that I asked you?
Ooh, that's a good question. I feel like we talked about like the common kind of common roles that people have project management experience in that they don't know. I do want to talk a little bit about the forecasted market demand for project managers, if that's cool. And the only reason why is because, you know, PMI is a project management institute. So for anybody who doesn't know, they oversee all things project management. So the project management professional certification, the PMP, they oversee that. They oversee the CAPM. They have a bunch of other certs as well. But what I love about PMI is that they do like their own investigations when it comes to market data and market demand and trends for project managers. And they recently dropped some data that showed that their forecast says there is supposed to be anywhere between a 25 million and 30 million person project management talent gap by 2035. And so the reason that I bring that up is because when I first, I won't say when I first got into project management, but probably a couple of years ago, everybody was telling me to get out of project management. They're like, oh, AI is going to replace that. Get out of project management. You know what you need to be doing? You need to be prompt engineering. That's going to be the next big opportunity is prompt engineering. Yeah. It wasn't the next big opportunity. And actually, like all these roles for prompt engineers are disappearing because that's how quickly that AI is kind of, you know, scaling. But project managers are still in high demand and that demand is going to grow as time goes on. So a lot of the times what I advise people to do is when you're thinking about a career that you want to switch into, you need to keep in mind that your career is not like something that happens like that, you need to be playing the long game. You know, you don't want to invest all this time and money and effort into a job that everybody says is going to be really hot right now. Look at the actual market data that, you know, either institutions put out or the government puts out and make sure that the career you're aiming for is forecasted to be around and that demand is going to be there. Because, I mean, if not, then what are we really doing?
Nah, that's facts. That's nice. I definitely didn't know that because I know I did see you. You did your green, what was it, green screen with like, I think it was either Wall Street Journal or something with the report on project management. So cool. So where can our listeners, where can they follow you at and keep up with you at?
So I'm on all the platforms. On Instagram, I'm at ANU Consultants. On TikTok, I'm at ANU Consultants. On YouTube, I'm at ANU Consulting. And, on LinkedIn, I'm just Veronica White, PMP CSM. But our big thing that we have is, you know, obviously we have a website. It's PMPmastermind.com. And we have our school community, which, you know, is linked on all of my platforms. It's the very first link in all of my bios. But if people join our school community, that's where we have like our course that preps them for the PMP. It gives them their 35 hours to meet the requirements. And, you know, that's where we help them. We'll look at their resumes or answer questions about LinkedIn. We have live support and office hours. And we also do in-person meetups. So after this, I'm leaving to Render, the Render conference in Atlanta. And we're doing a meetup there. So, you know, we got some things happening for the project management nerds.
Cool. And just for the people that may not be watching this on YouTube, and I know podcast players are a little bit different, so they probably won't see all the links. Like how to, what's the, like the website for school.com?
Oh my God, it's really long. We don't have a custom URL for school. It's like school.com/blah, blah, blah. But if you go on school, which is S-K-O-O-L, it's PM Mastermind. That's the name of our community.
I'll figure it out and I'll like send it out like in an email or something for people so they can check it out.
I appreciate that.
Well, guys, it's been another episode of Textual Talk. I thank you guys for tuning in. And as always, let's stay textual and we out. Peace.